Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today we want to keep talking about Milan. I recorded an awesome interview. It was before the Lille match, so before the winning streak ended, but there's still a lot to be beyond happy if you're a Milan fan. So I was very happy to have my friend Ale Iagobone from Milano. I hadn't spoken to him in a while. That'll be at the end of the podcast. I think you guys will all enjoy it. We do have 1,000 names with game picks since there are games this weekend. Then we have a segment at the top. I apologize. This week has been super hectic for me at work. I had a lot going on. So our episodes haven't been quite as long as I would like. But we'll make up for it. And we'll also, as usual, keep you entertained during the international break. But I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I've been thinking a lot about player values and whatnot. So I want to ask you this with transfers. And this was something that Marchisio brought up recently in an interview when he was asked about Chiesa. And Marchisio felt that Juve overpaid for Chiesa because his reasoning was like, this guy's played in the relegation zone for most of his career. I think Marchisio was implying that if he really was that good, maybe he wouldn't be in the relegation zone that much. So I want to ask you kind of what you feel about that. Obviously, it's a team sport game overall, but do you think it's fair or unfair to look at players that have spent a lot of time in the relegation zone and they should be seen as being worth less than someone who's played, let's say, on a team that has higher standards?
It's an interesting question. I can really think about it from many sports perspectives. I know it's not called a relegation zone in other leagues, and there really isn't other leagues that have relegation that I watch. But still, I want to say yes, David. I do think that it's a fair gripe to say, you shouldn't be worth as much because you've been in the relegation zone for most of your career. I do think that's a fair gripe. Now, there definitely could be examples, and I'm not good off the top of my head like this, but I know there are obviously examples to work against it, but there almost always are for anything that's worth asking. So it's really not even that necessary that I remember them. But overall, yeah, I think if you're consistently in the relegation zone for more than an abnormal period of time. So if it's like any more than, especially if we're looking at a career and it's like 5+ years and possibly much more than that in the relegation zone, you have to ask yourself, all right, fine. It can happen to good players. Every bad team still needs a couple good players in top leagues. So it will happen. But overall, if you've spent the majority of your career in the relegation zone, that's got to tell me something. Maybe it's about your personality. Maybe you don't do well at other teams with big stars. Maybe you just were never good enough to fully put your team on your back like maybe other players would to get them higher up and out of their relegation zone. I know there's 11 players on a pitch, but the best players who do more often than not deserve to be on better teams can carry their teams. So once again, I definitely think there are examples to go against it. Maybe some players have just been unlucky. David, maybe some players have actually just prioritized where they live. Maybe it hasn't even been fully about football with some players. So there might be even some players that had offers to go to better teams, and they said, you know what? I'm fine being a star on this team. Maybe I have a good connection with the city, the fan base, and I might not even want to take the risk and go to a big team and kind of lose my shine, if you will. So I'm sure those are the examples that could definitely work against this. But I think on majority, the way I want to lean is, I think more often than not, it's going to shine a light on something about the player that maybe prevented them from being on a better team. So I think if it went on for most of the player's career, you'd have to look at the player. You wouldn't just be able to blame it on the rest of football. You'd have to blame it on the actual subject, the player. So now I've gotten so far into this. You gave me a little context before you asked, but even a bit further, I got to think you're going somewhere with this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with a lot of what you say. The only thing that I would add to that is my reservation would also be, is this player going to be able to handle being on a bigger stage? And so that's very important. I think you also made a good point. There are some players who are probably much better than the zone they are in, and for whatever reason they want to be on their teams. But you are right, there is something that prompted this. So this morning I got up, I was one of the first things I usually do every morning is I read Gazzetta dello Sport on my iPad, and they had an awesome article on Sassuolo. You guys know they kind of become my team the middle of last season to now. I really, really enjoy watching them. And their sporting director, Carnevale, who I think is superb, and I think he's going to be at a top, top club in Italy very soon, was asked about the fact that the club held on to Berardi, Locatelli, and Boga this summer. And he said, look, we didn't have to sell anyone. One thing that, and we've talked about it in the past, the Sassuolo have very rich owners. They didn't have any need to sell. Obviously, in the COVID era, I think they probably would have sold one of these players with the right offer, but nobody was able to come up with the right number. Boga was definitely available for around 40 million. But then what Carnevale said was like, okay, great, we're happy to keep them. And because they're going to stay here, they are progressing. And he goes, in my opinion, these three players combined are worth 140 million. So I tweeted that. My friends at Italian Football TV kindly took the quote. I appreciated that they put me. They could have put just Gazzetta dello Sport. I was kind of the middleman. Very interesting quote. And I have to be honest, I was surprised by how many people found these valuations of these players, to be way more than it should be. And it made me think right away about that Marchisio quote about players in the relegation zone. And it made me realize that we've seen Chiesa, who goes to Juve, and I know it was a loan deal spread out over multiple years for a combined 60 million. He was in the relegation zone at Fiorentina most of his career. And then we saw Tonali go to from Brescia to Milan, and his team flat out got relegated, and it was just one season in Serie A. Now, does that mean that Tonali sucks because Brescia went down to Serie B? No, obviously not. He was one of the reasons why it didn't happen sooner. So there's that. And Chiesa, you know, maybe was the signature player at Fiorentina. Maybe you could have expected a little bit more. But to me, then the argument, then you can flip it. And in my opinion, the fact, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this, Alex, in a second. I asked you, you know, if a player is on a team that's struggling, well, what if a player is on a player that's on a team that's really overachieving? Right now, Sassuolo's sitting in second place. They've been superb. And they've been mainly carried by Berardi and Locatelli. Boga, who just came back, he had COVID. He was out for a while. So to me, that already tells me a ton about Berardi and Locatelli. And this isn't just a flash in the pan. Berardi's been excellent, of course, for a long time. We've been talking about Locatelli on this podcast for a long time. So, you know, to me, then the opposite is also true. If you're a player that really helps a team do well, I think that definitely impacts your value. And Boga, we know Sassuolo turned down 40 million. And then when I look at the age of these players, like Locatelli is going to turn 23 in January. Boga is going to turn 24 in January. They are not even quite yet in their prime. Berardi is 26, so he is older. But he's had a very, very good track record in Serie A. So to me, right away, if you are telling me that Chiesa and Tonali combined went for 100 million, and again, I know those were loan deals, but they're really purchases in disguise spread out over multiple years, but those figures still count. And Sassuolo themselves have structured deals the same way. And I really think had Juve this summer really wanted to go to Locatelli, to get Locatelli, I think Sassuolo would have played ball on a loan deal with an option to buy after 2 years. The other thing too, that, and I saw some people brought this up, that they're like, oh, we're worried that these Sassuolo players is like Atalanta and they are system players. Now, it is possible because I love De Zerbi on this podcast, but Sassuolo players in general have done well on other clubs. We've seen Acerbi at Lazio, become one of the best center backs in Serie A. Sensi at Inter, when healthy, superb. Politano, very valuable player as well. Sensi did play for De Zerbi. So to me, it's not like an Atalanta thing by any means. So when I see 140 million for these three players, Is it a lot? Yeah, no doubt about it. It's a lot. But these are also players that are making a really, really big impact, have upside, have positions that do well on the market. So, Alex, before we get to 1,000 names, what do you feel about teams that are overachieving a lot? Like, do you feel their players' value should go up a lot, or do you think that doesn't matter quite as much? It's more the opposite if they're doing poorly, that their value goes down.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I give it some credence. If they're overachieving, I think that team certainly has the right to overvalue them, if you know what I mean, because they're obviously so important for keeping that team overachieving and keeping that team maybe higher than they should be. And quite often you do have, I want to say bad teams. I don't mean bad teams. I just mean lower table teams. Quite often you do have lower table teams with some good players that, of course, big teams want. And those good players from time to time will go on streaks and they will have that team overachieving. And I'll make a Premier League parallel so I can at least give an example that I really know about. Declan Rice is at West Ham. West Ham is not a very good team. They have some good individual players, but they're not a very good team. And they're a mess of a club, an absolute mess of a club. Their best player is 21 years old, Rice. He's played every second for the last 2+ seasons for the team, which is ridiculous. He's their captain. Many big teams want him. They're doing okay right now. He's playing well. He has them overachieving. And West Ham publicly ask for 80 freaking million. So you kind of have a good example there. Now, he could technically be worth that in the long haul. But besides English tax, that's also West Ham saying he is really freaking important to us. So you want to buy him? Well, we are going to use every reason possible why you should be spending 80 million. And of course, now what teams, like bad teams, once again, lower table teams, what they have these players on contracts for, that definitely factors in. Because if they've managed to somehow get this star player of theirs on a good contract, well then, yeah, they really do have every reason and right to fight that much more to get the ultimate price to overvalue them, because they're also not paying an arm and a leg to have the player at the club. That's actually a situation with Rice as well. He's not on that meaty of a contract at West Ham. So West Ham kind of look at it like, well, we don't care what you think. If it's overvaluing, fine, because we have him on a good contract and he's our best player. So, yeah, we're asking this. So I do think that's
very well.
Yeah, I think that's well within that team's right. I really do.
Yeah, no, and Rice, look, they don't play the same position, but it really reminds me of Belotti at Torino, I think the world of, and he has loyalty to the club and all. So, yeah, very interesting discussion. So I appreciate perspective. Just one last thought on why I think those Sassuolo players too, I'm fine with that value. Keep in mind, these are younger players that are coming from a small team. They're not going to demand a huge salary. So, again, you know, to clubs, what matters is adding the amortized value for the year and the annual salary. And even if you have to spend a lot on the transfer fee, you are getting a very good player at a lower salary. So speaking of a very good player on a lower salary, we get to have 1,000 names for free on our podcast, Making Picks. And we have a weekend of Serie A action coming. I'm already laughing because I didn't review these game picks until I got them. But here we go. So you guys know the rules. 1,000 names sends me via message 3 games. I don't know which games he's going to pick, and I'm going to pick against them. So let's start with Lazio hosting Juve. 1,000 names as Lazio winning 2-0. Goal by Correa and an own goal by Bonucci. And he says Limone Inzaghi is going to win once again. And he's going to be carried by the players positive to COVID. For those that don't know what a reference this is, and I shouldn't laugh because it's not a laughing matter, I apologize, is the team doctor at Lazio came out and said that in his opinion, if a player doesn't have symptoms, it doesn't matter if he tests positive or not. In his opinion, they can be out there playing. And there's been reports of maybe Lazio fudging these a COVID test, and in their opinion, it's he doesn't have symptoms, he can play, he's not contagious. I'm not gonna go any further on that. And then 1,000 keeps saying Pirlo continues to not know anything, to not have figured anything out, and that Juve's transfer window was bad. So Juve looked good in the Champions League. Lazio had a last-second comeback with Correa. I'm going to go a draw here. I'm going to go 1-1, and I'm going to give a goal to Ronaldo and Immobile here. Then a good game. I didn't realize this was coming up. Atalanta hosting Inter. This is going to be good. Thousand names. Oh, let me read it in Italian. Lazio Juve. 2-0, Correa Bonucci, Limone Inzaghi vince ancora trascinato dai positivi al Covid. Pirlo continua a non capire niente. Mercato ridicolo. Big game. Atalanta Inter. Thousand names has it 2-2. Goals by Palomino, Malinovsky, Hakimi, and Darmian. Quite the lineup. He goes, Lautaro is going to miss a penalty, and so is Muriel. He says, Vidal and Pasalic are going to get red cards. He says, Gasperini is really coming back down to earth, that Conte is going to find once again his heroes, and that they have the Scudetto in their hand. Thank you, Thousand. I don't feel great about my Inter Scudetto pick right now. In Italian, Atalanta, Inter 2-2, Palomino, Malinovsky, Hakimi, Darmian, Lautaro e Muriel sbagliano rigore, espulsi Vidal e Pasalic, Gasperini ridimensionato definitivamente, Conte ritrova i suoi eroi, Scudetto in mano. I'm going to be bold. I'm not giving up on my Inter Scudetto pick, so I'm going to have Inter 2-1, and I'll give Lautaro look really good against Real Madrid, and there's now a lot of buzz in him going to Spain again. So I'm going to go Inter, braced by Lautaro, and I'll agree with Thousand. I like Malinovsky, so we'll give him a goal. And then final game that he picked, Torino hosting Crotone. He has a hat trick for Belotti, Torino winning 3-0. And he says that that Belotti only scores against teams that are worthy of the Lega Pro, and that he's always showing off against weak opponents. He says Cairo from the hospital is going to be in tears. That's Torino's president. And that Giampaolo is finally back. Torino actually won their makeup game from earlier in the season, which they needed. In Italian, Torino Crotone, Belotti tripletta, il ballo Gelotti fa il galletto sulla spazzatura, segnando contro squadre da Lega Pro, Cairo dall'ospedale in lacrime, Giampaolo risorto. I like Crotone. I like Messias, I like Sini, but Torino really needs points. So I'll go Torino 2-1. I'll give Belotti a brace, and I'll give Messias a goal. So thank you, Thousand Names, for the game picks. Okay, guys, before we get to Alessandro Iagobone on Milan, which is the meat and potatoes of today's episode, we are going to do a quick segment for our patrons. This one's shorter than usual, but usually our patron segments are very long. If you enjoy Calcio Land, consider becoming a patron. We'll answer all your questions. There's a great community. We're going to have an exclusive interview, which we have every month, with Napoli Outsider coming up in a few weeks, and a bunch of other content. Okay, I'm very excited to welcome our next guest for two reasons. Because A, it's been way too long since I talked to my good friend Alessandro Iacobone from Milano, someone I've really gotten to enjoy knowing through Calcio Land. And also, I was telling Ale before we came on, we've done quite a few interviews, and this is by far the best Milan has been since we've been chatting. So Ale is like me, has been around for a while. He's been following Milan since 1983 when they were in Serie B. He's one of the co-founders of Radio Rossonera, a great radio station in Italy. We've had a few guests from them as well. You can see him on TMW Radio, TV dello Sport. He is a great presence if you want to know more about Milan. So Alessandro, always a real pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcio Land.
Ciao, David. Thank you for the invitation. And one big hug to the listeners. And it's a pleasure, as always, like to be part of your amazing podcast. So I'm here for you and waiting for your question regarding Milan, since we can speak highly about this. finally, absolutely, after a long time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just a quick note, Ale and I are recording a little bit before the Milan-Lille match, but we're going to focus more on Serie A today. So Ale, let me just ask you this. As I mentioned, we've done quite a few of these interviews. Milan right now is in first place in Serie A. They haven't lost a game in 24 matches, an unbelievable streak. Now, I know you are a rossonero doc, as I like to say, but you're also pretty objective, which I like about you. So let me ask you this. Did you expect Milan to get off to such a fast start this season?
Well, honestly, friend, like my friend, is like a kind of surprise, because after the amazing end of the last season, that considering time was not like that far, they didn't have like enough time to rest, but was enough time to lose the physical condition, the athletic one. So I'm kind of surprising that AC Milan is like running so fast. Probably even because of the tactical approach that permitted to the team to run in a smart way, don't wasting energies like without reason. So even if it's intensive, like a way to play, I guess that Pioli and his staff did an amazing approach to this side of the game, and let me say, it's been a surprise, and I'm glad to be surprised.
Yeah, for sure, I know you are. So let me ask you this, Ale. Right now, Milan is in first place, but Milan also hasn't been in the Champions League in a long time. And it's very important for Milan to get back, as it is for any team for that matter. But especially for Milan, it's been such a long time, and the financials ramifications. So let me ask you this. If between you and I offered you right now that Milan is going to finish the season fourth, and they're going to go back to the Champions League next season, would you take it, or would you say, you know what, Dave, I'm going to take my chances. Milan can do even better than that. What would you do?
Well, that's an amazing and sister-like question, because I tell you that I get your offer. Like, I take it, I sign it. Tell me where I have to sign it, because As a supporter, I could answer to you, no, let me have fun till the end, yeah, because this AC Milan team like could surprise all of them. But since my love for AC Milan is stronger than my passion too, like, I mean, and the future of AC Milan passed through the qualification of the next Champions League, let me get your offer. And so I sign it, and thanks, my friend, for the contract.
Okay, so Ale, obviously Pioli has done a great job, but there's been a lot of talk of how much of an influence Ibrahimovic has had on a lot of the players, the younger players, and even some of the not so young players. So when you look at the turnaround that Milan has had, who do you give more credit to, Pioli or Ibrahimovic?
Well, that's interesting, because let me say, you know that I'm not a fan of Pioli. I was not.
Yeah, probably I remember.
On your podcast, I answered to your question. Like, if you ask me, do you consider Pioli the best trainer ever for your AC Milan in the future for your dream? I answer to you, not at all, you know, and the confirmation of him, like, could represent the mediocrity and the weight of Elliot to don't invest. And but let me say, I'm glad that I was wrong, because Ibrahimovic is important. The shoulder of Ibrahimovic cover the team, the young players, the Pioli manager. But let me say, even Maldini, Mazzara, and Gazzidis, even upper, like, even Elliot. So the shoulders of Ibrahimovic are, like, big enough for all of them. But as I said, like, to Sport Italia, when I was in the studio, like, last week, I was like underlining, and I need to admit that I was completely wrong, that Pioli improved a lot of players. It's easy to say Çalhanoğlu. It's easy to say Çalhanoğlu because Çalhanoğlu was put like in the wrong position, and Çalhanoğlu show already his quality. Up and down, turning on and turning off, but it was already doing. With this, even the other players as well. What surprised me is the growing up of a player like Calabria. For example, Calabria was like considered like a check, you know, to sell like a plus valenza and all the supporters, they were like inviting him to leave because he was representing not the right back on for the Milan dream team. But he grew up so much, and tactically, and his approach on the match, all the intensity for all the match, this is like clearly like a work of Pioli that he did on single players, and Calabria is the perfect example of the player that grew up for the Pioli's like influence. So I have to admit that the Pioli is doing a great job, and I'm glad. So I don't put like under like Ibrahimovic like value, but I put them both in the same level, and I'm glad that both of them have been confirmed with the Ragnik exclusion of the project. You know, so that's the best way.
Absolutely. So beyond the influence that Ibrahimovic is having on the other players and the club as a whole, obviously this is amazing performances on the pitch. I think he has, you know, you combine goals and assists, he has more than the matches that he's played. He's been absolutely amazing. So beyond the leadership, but strictly on his ability as a player, when we heard that Zlatan was coming back to Milan, like, what was your best case scenario for him as a player? Did you expect them to perform quite at this level?
Honestly, I improved my confidence. When I was complaining the old management, and when I say old, I'm saying like Berlusconi and Galliani. I improved like. Not being alienated like to their decision since they sold Thiago Silva and Ibrahimovic in the 12, right? Yes, the 12, the summer of the 20, like yes, like 2012. Yes, I was wrong. I was right. And that year, like, since that year till now, I thought how many things and could change with Ibrahimovic into the team. I was thinking and dreaming and blaming either the decision, like, to kick him out, selling to Paris Saint-Germain. And I was extremely, extremely happy for his coming back to his home, the second home, the way he's calling AC Milan and Milano. But honestly, I'm surprised for the quality and for the way of his presence like into the team. I could not think that he was playing every team matches. I could not think that he was like improving also his teammates in this way. Is like even more magical than the first experience in the Milan when he transformed like Nocerino in a top player or whatever, like even Boateng in a top player as well. So he's doing with players that probably are less quality of those, and with for sure a team with less. Top player into the list, but he's doing. And what is making me happy is that this is definitely the reason why the AC Milan manager wants like to renew his contract. But in the meantime, scares me because I'm afraid I'm afraid that when he's gonna leave, we're gonna find like a huge black hole that I hope could be like over with another strong personality player, another leader, someone like even younger, and even part of this list of the teammates that are still like now in the Similan list, but definitely someone that grew up in time on time, like to replace him, because otherwise it's gonna be complicated, and that's why I wish also to have like some matches without him into the field order like to teach to the team to stay without Ibra as well. They demonstrate that it could work anyway, because it's happened already. But he was around. He was on the stage. He was on the bank. He was like with the eyes on the teammates. I'm curious to know what's going on when he was not going to be in Milanello, in AC Milan, in Casa Mila offices. That's something that makes me curious. I hope that they're going to keep a desk for him in the Aldo Rossi.
For sure. Listen, you never want to bet against Ibra, and God knows how long you keep playing this way. And I get asked this a lot, so I'm going to throw just a couple of names at you as a potential long-term replacement for Zlatan. Probably not next year, seeing the way he's playing, but maybe in 2 years. So some players that could be available are Mauro Icardi, Belotti, Milik. Do any of these players intrigue you more than others as a potential replacement for Ibra?
Okay, allora, it's like thanks for the question. No, but Icardi is like I like Icardi. Mostly of the Milan supporters, they don't. They see like even the Inter stamp on his head, and but honestly, I would like to see him like open his arms under the Curva Nord after scoring a goal in the derby, because he's a painful player for the enemies when he's into the field. And we know a lot, because he scored so many goals into the derbies. And Belotti is a rossonero heart, but I don't think that has the strong, like, that he grew up enough to complete like his performance to the Ibrahimovic level, I mean, to replace him. And Milik is not like physically, doesn't give you like the guarantee, like physically to keep having like a career like long as much Ibrahimovic did, and with the same like health. Let me say one player that is not young, is not definitely that young, is younger than Ibrahimovic, but could work like for AC Milan for a couple of years in the high level, is something that is someone that I really hope that he was coming to Milan and is being close when Chinese like ownership was like present in Casa Mila, and probably could be to the end with his team, the most important team in the world, and is Real Madrid. Let me say that if I cannot get anyone else, I will get like Benzema.
Benzema is my
favorite. Is like an asshole. As much as I like into the player, he's like physically strong. He knows. He asks the ball in the place and the spot where he needs like for to realize the score and everything. So he's someone that drives all the for like part of the team. And let me say that he's like one player that I would like to see with our skirt.
I like it. Great shout. So let's talk about two players that have improved a ton this season, Çalhanoğlu and Kessié. And I think those guys have become really, really excellent. So who has surprised you more between those two?
I was like defending them like against the critics of the supporters, especially the supporters that were criticizing like them for the people, for the manager that bought them and that didn't leave a good sign into the store history of the team. And I mean, probably because of the Chinese ownership that was like a kind of mess waiting for the Bonifici and the bank accounts and blah, blah, yep. blah, all the things that made like that year very tough for the supporters. So I don't blame them. They were blind looking at the Çalhanoğlu and Kessié. But they, of course, when they've been put, then that this is like a price of a Pioli to put in the putting them in the right position, they grow up a lot. Kessié is like a wall. Kessié is amazing. Kessié, yeah. I've no idea. Like Kessié is represented the midfielder like the perfect, the prototype. Like he's everywhere. Like clean passes. Like clean run. He has like four lunges. Like I don't know. It's like, I mean, he's an extraterrestrial, like, he's an alien. I don't know. I don't know how to to underline Kessié's performance. Çalhanoğlu is the number 10 that if he was not like a Similan player, was like praying to buy him. Because the way that he kicks, the way that he's moving into the field when he's like, physically and mentally, nobody has it. Probably the only one that he has the same like creativity is like Szoboszlai, probably a young player that could be like on the same way of Çalhanoğlu, but a few of there are like not so many fans number 10 into the market, and so that's why I pray every day that they're gonna confirm him, like, because he's a completely hard situation right now. The asking of the high, like the amount of the salary and the offer of Elliot and Gazzidis team stuff. So there is a big gap still, and I hope that it's gonna be completed. Because this is like a player that I would like not to lose for zero. Could be like seriously a drama. Don't let me think about it.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And yeah, as you were talking about Kessié, I was just having flashbacks to Desailly when he was at Milan. I know they're not exactly the same, but he's just, Kessié is like as good a defensive midfielder as there is in Serie A right now. So I want to ask you about two players that arrived on loan. And I know there was some disappointment that there wasn't a formal option to buy, but I think Maldini and Massara were right. You just want to bring talent, get Milan back to the Champions League. And both Brahim Diaz and Diego Dolo have done well. So let me ask you, what have you made of them so far as Milan players? And are you cautiously optimistic, or maybe optimistic, Milan will be able to retain one of them, or maybe even both long term?
I don't want to lie to our listeners. I don't want to lie to Rossoneri fans.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, I didn't agree in the time when we bought or we took like the two players with this solution, but after that we saw the minus that we had like in balance, I understood that Maldini and Massara thought like to improve like the quality of the players without spend money in order like to reach the Champions League qualification, and in that case to improve the team. Inter did the same steps with Rafinha.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, with Cancelo, all the things. We also had, they also had the chance to buy them we don't have this chance at the moment since the contract. And let me say, both of the players, it's going to be hard to sign them like easily. I tell you honestly, because I spoke with some of the stockholders they are like in the council of Real Madrid, and they were not even sure to let him go for loan, by loan, you know, and because they love him, they consider him like a next superstar, a future superstar. So I know also that the player, the standby of 3-4 days between the rumors and the signing of the contract has been because the player was not like that convinced to arrive to reach Milan, but not because of Milan, of course, it's because of the love of Real Madrid, you know, and because Real Madrid represent for the Spanish players represent something the top. I hope that Brian Diaz gonna fall in love for what he's doing for the in Milan, in AC Milan, for what is growing around him, with him a part of it. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I would like in the end of the season to hear Brahim change mind about the return back to Madrid. Because he felt in love for another woman, a perfect woman, the most beautiful woman. Okay?
Absolutely.
With the Italian charm. With the Italian charm. About this, we are good enough. Okay? So,
I love
it. Apart joking, the same stuff is like for with Dalot. What is scaring me about Dalot is that Real Madrid could work without Brian Diaz. Diogo Dalot into the Manchester that is doing so and so, if he does like a great season, it could be like something that they can propose to the supporter as a retro back, a champion that has a new value, that had a good season without spend any euro. And this is scaring me a lot because Manchester United is still looking for the new way, like the new future, the new, you know, composing the new team and the new project. So in this like situation, Diogo Dalot could be like the perfect, you know, cherry on the cake. Without spend anything, he comes back with a stronger like. Confidence in himself, even with a good season and everything, and could be harder to convince Manchester to leave and like to AC Milan.
Okay, well, Ale, let's close on this. I think I've asked you this almost every time you've been on the show because there's always the negotiations for Donnarumma extension. So do you think it's gonna get done? And I know you've been tweeting a lot about it on how it could look like. So you think this extension is gonna happen? Do you think there'll be a release clause? I always say, you know, release clause, you know, at the end of the day, the player also has to agree to leave. So they're not an end be all. So what do you make of Donnarumma's current contract situation?
Okay, the Donnarumma contract is the contract that is worrying me less than the others, Çalhanoğlu and blah, 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 because I know that there is an agreement between Donnarumma and Raiola to don't leave AC Milan to zero. And so that makes me like willing like to have like a renewal of the contract. And you spoke about the clause like that could be put into the contract, and that's extremely the most sensitive part of the contract, because there is Raiola that would like to put it at the 30 millions maximum. When AC Milan management ask at least 50 millions, that I consider still too low, compared what he's asking as salary. So for me, I also tweeted about it, the right thing could be to create a rule, you know, a general rule for all the players, that if you ask 2 million a year as a salary, the clause cannot be higher than 20, 10 times more, you know?
I like that.
So, if you ask 7 million, it cannot be less than 70, because there is no proportion between the salary that Donnarumma, the Raiola, ask compared to the clause that he wants to put. You know? I mean, it's like if you have a old car that your grandpa gave to you and the insurance ask $10,000 a year to cover the insurance of the car. No, there is not proportion, you know? So the same thing, I think that you want 7 million, fine. I give you 7 million because he deserves 7 million. But you cannot live with less, or you cannot live if we are in contrast and you, I don't want to leave you, I don't want to sell you. Of course, if the team agrees to don't do like 70, but do 60 or 50, whatever, is something that they decided to do. But in that case, to make the position stronger for the team, that at the moment, let me say, is not, at least the rules of the 10 times more could be the perfect balance. Because if you gain 7 million by year, like, of course, you value at least 70 million if you want to change your skirt. That's my idea. I mean, I'm not like a manager, a football manager, but I wish that could even put like some like brain into this kind of contract, because otherwise it's always unfair. And the position of the players before Bosman, like rules, like it was like in the case it was like too less, but now it's too much. And the players, they have always, more than the players, the manager of the players, they are like, always like playing dirty games as much as like the Çalhanoğlu's manager is doing, that is emulating Raiola. But Raiola, I don't like his way to approach, but he's smart enough to understand when he needs to quit the game. I don't know if Stepić over the Çalhanoğlu's manager is smart enough.
Well said. Well said. But Ale, I can't thank you enough. I'm glad, as I said, we've done a lot of these interviews. This has been the best period for Milan. Usually I always ask you to end on, give us something to be optimistic about, but the team has been great. So it's great. I know you're a big Milan fan, so I know you're very happy. So listen, guys, the January transfer window, before you know, is coming. I usually don't recommend too many people outside of my colleagues, but Ale is really, really good when it comes to Milan's transfers. If you remember, he was the first with Piontek a couple of Januaries ago. So maybe he'll have a big scoop for us. So definitely follow Ale at Non Evoluto. Check out all his work, his YouTube channel. It's superb. If you hear him on Radio Rossonero, you see him on TV in Italy, you will always get big passion for Milan and knowledge. So thank you so much, my friend. It was wonderful to have you on the show again.
David, thanks for the invitation again. And I love your podcast. So I'm one of your followers. So I'm glad to have this chance to talk to you, to the other followers. And thanks for your words. And I can wait to hug you here in Italy. That means that this bad friend called the COVID is going to be kicked out from our life, and everything turns back to be normal. And so be safe, and I wish the best to you and the followers, and of course, Milan supporters.